one second. So just a quick review of what we did last week. So we said that We said tefillah is not prayer. Prayer is all about begging. We said tefillah is really to struggle with what I want. Right? Rav Kook bases that on the pasuk when Yaakov is on his deathbed. Right? Ra'ol fanecha lo pilalti. I never paleled, I would ever see you. I never wished, I never wanted, I never imagined. Right? Lehit palel, the reflexive. I'm struggling with what I want, what I wish. Right? What do I want? Do I want what I want? What could I want? What should I want? Is there a list of things that you should want? Right? We talked about the fact that what we want is who we are. Right? We talked about the fact that nothing comes into the world unless you want it. And that just like we have to physically work and exercise our bodies so we can be healthy, right? We also spiritually work and exercise our will to develop koach ratzon, to develop our will. Okay? And that sets the stage for another piece of introduction. Okay? Unlike last week, we're going to use this daf makarot for a while, for like 3 or 4 of these sessions. So just give them back at the end. It's easier. I'll hang on to them. You don't need them in between. If somebody really wants to study it on your own, then obviously write your name on it. But at the end, I'm happy to give them to you. I just think it'll be easier if we... So just pass these around. If you want to write on the sheet, then put your name on it and hang on to it. Or give it back to me and then just look for the one that you wrote on. That's fine too. Okay? So, how many times a day do we daven? Mr. Grum, how many times a day do we daven?
Three.
Now, you're right. And everybody agrees, right? Jonathan Turek, right? What are the 3 times we daven?
Shachar and Mor.
Okay, and that's what everybody will tell you, and they'll be right. Right? And I'm telling you, you're right. Now that I told you you're right, I can tell you, you're wrong. Okay? We don't daven only 3 times a day. And that is exactly what Rav Kook is going to talk about. Okay? And the line that I'm about to share with you would be a very different discussion if we had not explained what tefillah really is. So now let's see where we get to this, okay? Hatfilah, this is number one. Hatfilah hamatmedet shel hanishama mitametzet hi tamid latzet min ha'elem el ha'giloi. Okay? This is the first line of the introduction to tefillah in Rav Kook's Olat HaRiyah. Okay? This is the sefer that we're going to be primarily using for these discussions, mostly because it's not translated into English. It's the best sefer, it's the best book on tefillah I've ever seen, and for me. And I don't know why it's not translated into English, but it completely changed the way I daven. Although all of the writing, all the pieces we're going to study are from Rav Kook, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook, the first chief rabbi of Israel before there was a state, Talmud Muvhak, right, a student of the Netziv, it was put together by his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, from pieces that he wrote all over Divrei Chazal, all over his writings, all over Shas. Much of it is from the Einaya, which is his commentary on Shas, specifically from his comments on Masechet Brachot. That is an amazing sefer to learn. If anybody wants to see the Einaya and have a discussion with me about it, I'm happy to do that during Seder, you know, whatever. But Rav Tzvi Yehuda organized this according to how he understood tefillah. Rav Tzvi Yehuda was one of the Gedolei Ador. He's nifter a number of years ago. I had the great space of hearing shiurim from him on a number of occasions. Unbelievable Talmid Chacham. Okay? And he felt this is what you start the introduction to tefillah. Okay? So let's understand this. Hatfilah hamatmedet, the constant state of tefillah, shel haneshama, the constant state of tefillah of the soul, mitametzet hitamid, it is constantly striving, latzet min ha'elem el hagilui, to come out of the hidden into the revealed. Now let's think about this. Okay? What Rav Kook is saying here is that the soul is not, it's not that we daven 3 times a day, it's that we're always in a state of tefillah. My soul is always in a state of tefillah, but 3 times a day I try to get out of the way and allow that to be revealed. Now what do we obviously have to do here? What do we have to do? We're learning, we're in yeshiva, what do?
Define.
We define our terms. What do we have to define?
Tefillah.
Well, tefillah we defined. Tefillah we said is struggling with what I want. Let's put it simply like that.
Find what we want.
Pardon? Well, that's the process of tefillah, and we'll get there too.
Define what it means for our soul to be revealed.
Well, before you can define what it means for a soul to be revealed, what's a soul? And people avoid this. You know why people avoid this? I remember I told you, I had a Rebbe used to say, if you can't explain something in a couple sentences, you don't get it. Well, how can you define the soul? So I want to, yeah? You're going to answer or you're going to ask?
Answer.
Well, not up to answers yet. Okay, but that's good. Okay, how do we define a soul? Like that just seems like So let's talk about the concept of a soul. First of all, I want you to know, we don't have a soul. We are a soul. This is a constant mistake that people make. Things that you have are physical, right? I have a water bottle. It's here, and it's not there. And that's what it means that I have it. By the way, the word to have, you should know, the word to have is an illusion. Okay? Josh Goldschmidt, you want to guess why having is an illusion? Want to guess?
You don't really have anything.
You don't really have anything. What is the modern Hebrew word? What's the Hebrew word for have, to have something? No. See, that's what most people answer. There is no word. There is no word. There is no word for having. What we say is we say yesh li. Yesh, it is to me. I'm describing my relationship with it, but I'm not saying to have. Now, the reason there's no Hebrew word for having is because having is an illusion. Right? Anytime you have a word in the Torah and you don't find a word in the Torah, that's because Hashem created everything. And everything that Hashem created is hidden in the Torah. That's what Chazal believed. So if you can't find something in the Torah, it means it's an illusion. I'll give you an example. The word suffix, doubt. Very important word. Very important word. All of Allah. Safek derabanan, safek deoraita, sfek sfeka, ein safek motzi midei vadai, right? These are important concepts in Allah. But you do not find the word safek, doubt, anywhere in the Torah. Do not find that word in the Torah. You know why? Because Hashem didn't create safek. Hashem just created. We have doubt about what Hashem created. That's our issue. By the way, that's why the word, give me 1 second. That's why the word vadai also isn't in the Torah. Certainty. Okay? That word does not exist. What do you mean to be certain? Hashem created it. Of course I'm certain. In fact, we get so confused about this that we mix them up. And I put my iPhone somewhere and I can't find it. So what do I say? I say, I'm sure I put it there, which means I'm not sure at all. I have no idea. We're confused. So anytime you don't find a word in the Torah, it's because it's an illusion. Right? There's no word for vacation. To vacate is to remove myself from life. Who removes himself from life? That's an illusion, vacation. Right? So this is the same. Okay? There is no word for having because having is an illusion. You don't really have anything. If anything, it has you. Right? So what is a soul? A soul is not what I have. A soul is who I am. Now, second point to make. So we get this impression that my soul wants. There's a soul and it wants. And that's a mistake too. That is the physical world. A soul doesn't want, a soul is want. A soul doesn't have ratzon, the soul is ratzon. You know what a neshama is in its core? And obviously we could spend a year just talking about neshama and the different aspects of the neshama. You'll have Rabbi Aaron for that. But the essence of a neshama is ratzon. Now I want you to think about this for a minute. When I tap into what my ratzon is, I'm tapping into my neshama. Okay? If you ever had an experience, you know, this summer, a very difficult summer. Very difficult summer, right? David Berger, fight it! You wake! Fight it! Right? What did I just say? Oh, did I say David Berger? Oh, that's because he was sick. No, I was thinking.
Oh, Rafi's in the back.
Remind me your name.
Who are you pointing?
Jesse Katz. Oh, okay. I promise you one thing this year. If I ever forget someone's name, I will not be embarrassed. I will just tell you I forget your name, because I don't believe in that. I just think that's a waste of energy, and I'm honest about it. It's because we haven't copped a good schmooze yet, but okay. That's okay. I don't know why that's funny, but all right. I apologize. Okay. But I want you to understand, okay? The ratzon is who I am. So this summer was a very difficult summer. And there was a boy in Efrat, among many of the Levayot that we went through this summer. And he was killed in combat in Gaza, and devastated my kids. My daughter, he was her Madrich B'nai Akiva. My son was friendly with him, but I didn't know. I later realized I had once taken him in a tramp, and we had gotten into one of those he's in the back of the car discussions, but I didn't really know. But I felt like, you know, my daughter was going and wanted to go on her own, so I went with her. And my wife couldn't go. And I'm standing in the funeral, there were about, I don't know, must have been 10,000-15,000 people there. The overwhelming majority of people did not know him. Half of Efrat showed up, people from all over the country. And one of the things that happened this summer was people were going to funerals of soldiers they didn't know as a sign of respect, like, we're there for you, even though You know, you may have heard about Max Steinberg, who was a Chayal Boded. He was a lone soldier. He didn't really know many people in this country. 30,000 people came to his levaya. My wife went to his levaya. And I remember at this particular levaya for Yuval Hyman, so there's like 15,000, maybe 20,000 people there at this levaya. And there was like a moment where the mother was speaking, and you just lost it. Just lost it. And there's 20,000 people there, and there's not a dry eye in the place. And you start to cry. Now, you don't know this person. Why are you crying? The reason you're crying is because something touched your neshama. Anytime you find you're crying, it could be tears of pain, it could be tears of joy, it's because something touches your neshama. It is such a mistake that the West has, that a guy starts to cry, and he's like, oh, I don't want to cry. Right? That's ridiculous. That's like not going to the bathroom when you have to go to the bathroom. That's a natural occurrence where the spiritual is impacting the physical. It's one of the healthiest things you can experience in this world. You know, there were years that I just didn't cry, couldn't cry, until a very close friend of mine was killed in combat, and then it all came gushing out. And that's very healthy. Judaism believes tears don't go down, they go up. But what's really happening? I'm tapping into a ratzon that's so real and so deep and so true, right? It's a ratzon that's even bigger than just my individual ratzon. It's the achtut ha-kolelet, it's all of Am Yisrael, right? So the ratzon, right, is my soul. My soul is ratzon. Now, we have different neshamot, which is a very difficult word to use with the concept of a neshama, because by definition, what's the difference between something that's physical and something that's spiritual? What's the fundamental difference between that which is physical? Yeah?
You can touch something that's physical and it's tangible.
Okay, but what does that mean?
It's in your hand.
Like, pardon?
It's three dimensional.
It's like you're holding the water.
So if it's three dimensional, it's not.
Two dimensional?
Well, it's not four dimensional, right? Okay? It's limited. Something is physical, it's here and not there.
It's within reach.
It's within reach. Not always. The sun is physical, it's not within reach. Right? But it's there and it's not there. It sets and it rises. What?
It's all a point.
Okay, right? I mean,
the sun is technically within reach, not like with your...
Okay, okay. Back to high school? No, I don't think so, right? Yeah?
Something that's physical has a specific location.
Pardon?
Something that's physical has...
Well, that means that it's limited.
Right, and
it's there.
The soul is infinite.
The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim says that Hashem cannot be physical. Now, put aside the theological question of Hashem cannot and whether you can say that, but Hashem cannot be physical according to the Rambam because Hashem is everywhere. Hashem has no limits. Hashem is the essence of spirituality. Now, there are theological questions that are raised from that. We're not going to go there because we're studying Tefillah, right? The Neshama, by definition, is not physical. It's spiritual. So how do I have a soul that's mine and not yours? But if the soul is Ratzon, right? Like, give me 1 second, because I just want to develop this point. You know, I don't know, who here loves to run? You love to run? You love to run? Okay. See, now, from my perspective, right? Like, do you love to, like, really, like, get out, run 10, 20 kilometers? Anybody like that? Michigan? Okay. All right, so now, from my perspective, I think you guys are out of your mind. There's something seriously wrong with you.
Probably.
Like, why would you want to run somewhere just to run? You're not even trying to get somewhere, right? But that's a ratzon that you have. And that's a gift. And you cannot explain why some people love to run and some people love to, right? I don't know. Ben, what instrument do you play?
None.
Okay? So if I gave you a guitar, that wouldn't excite you.
Probably.
Right. Now me, you give me a guitar. You know, never mind me. My son, Yonatan. So at a certain stage, he just, you know, I think it had to do with the incredibly engaged experience he was having at the time in school. He got into guitar. Right? And he loves to play guitar. If he's ever having a bad day, give him a guitar, he'll sit in front of the internet, find somebody doing a song, and just watch it and learn how to play it. And he's unbelievable. And it fills his soul. But it doesn't fill yours. On the other hand, that's probably things that you want to do that he would think are out of his mind. You have your ratzon, he has his ratzon. Right? We all have friends. Okay? You came here, and you're in yeshiva, and you now are developing your ratzon. You're wanting something. Some of you are already wanting things you didn't imagine you could want. Some of you are sitting next to someone who really wants something. They're really into it. They're learning. And you can't imagine why they would want that. That doesn't make you wrong and them right. It just means your ratzon is different. And one of the most important things we can do is really take a good look. What is my ratzon? What could my ratzon be? Am I willing to work on my ratzon? But it's not that I decide now to want something in chakras. My neshama, the essence of me, is my ratzon. And it is constantly struggling to be realized. And that is the process of tefillah. Attempting to tap into what that ratzon is and to struggle with it to allow it to be realized in the world. What do I want? Do I want what I want? Is what I want what I could want? Now, here's an interesting question. How do I know if what I want is what I should want? Like, let's take an extreme example. Okay? Let's say you wake up in the morning and, I don't know, you want to do drugs. You want to get high on, I don't know, cocaine. Okay? Heroin. Right? I think everybody in the room could agree that that's not a good thing to want. If anybody is not sure about that, please see me after class, right? So we can agree that that's not a good thing to want. But this guy says, I want that. That's my neshama. So how do I know if what I want is a good want? Right? So that's why you have to have some sort of a recipe. Right? I have to figure out. How do I know if what I want is what I want?
Some sort of what?
Pardon? What
is it? Some sort of
recipe. How do I know if what I want is what I could want? What do you think? Yeah, Josh.
I have a question.
Okay, but before you get to your question, but don't forget it. How do I know, since you raised your hand, how can I figure out whether what I want is what I should want?
There's no way of knowing.
Disagree. Yeah?
You try to think of other things that you might want. If you don't want them, you're sure that you want this other thing. You know what I'm saying?
No.
You try to think, like, if I want this paper and I don't want that pen, I try to want that pen, but I just don't want it.
Right.
I want this paper.
No, so that's...
I'm set with my decision.
No. That's defining what it is you want. I want to know if what you want is what you should want. I'm sitting with a guy, and he wants to do cocaine. Now, one kind of guy who does cocaine, he knows it's not what he should want, and it's paining, it's killing him, but he's addicted. But there might be a guy who thinks it's okay to want. Like, let's say you say, it's 9 in the morning, and I stayed out last night till 3 a.m., and now I want to sleep till 2, and I'm going to do that every day. I'll go out till 3, I'll sleep till 2, whatever it is. Right? So I say, you're wanting the wrong things. Now, if you can't change that want, then, you know, this isn't the place for you, but you're wanting the wrong things, right? How do you know if what you want is what you should want? Yeah?
I think there are two things. I think one...
It's only one.
So I think you need to have, like, kind of a somewhat, like, moral values or basis to what the right things... Like, what's right and what's wrong to want. Like, I don't...
But how do you do that?
I think you have to have a basis off...
Oh, so what you're saying is we have principles, yeah, and we allow our wants to be guided by our principles. What if my principles are screwed up? If I'm Adolf Hitler, I want to go find Jews, shech them, and put them in an oven. That's what I want. That's my principle. On principle, we should get rid of all the Jews. That makes it right? That makes it a good want? No.
So that's the idea is our morals like subjective or objective, right?
Okay, yeah, that gets us into the question of objective morality, but how do you know if what you want is what you want? It's very simple.
Based on Torah and Halacha.
Okay, so what does that mean? That's true, obviously, because I'm a Rebbe, I have to say that's true, right? What does that mean? What does that mean?
Halacha...
What I want is what?
I mean, Halacha frowns upon something. As in shame the drugs, obviously you should be doing it. Huh?
I want to want what Hashem wants me to want. Chazal say, I say, this is such an important line. I want you to know, this is the single most important line in Judaism. Asei ritzono, ritzoncha. Make his will your will. Now, by the way, this is going to leave us with a question. If I can be doing something, if I can want something, we're not, by the way, I want to be clear here.
That's the question.
We're not talking, one more second. We're not talking, and Josh, I haven't forgotten you have a question. We're not talking about what you do. Okay? Because you want to do what Hashem wants you to do. We're talking about wanting. Can I actually want what Hashem wants me to want? That's much harder. Right? I don't just want to eat kosher food and not eat unkosher food. I want to only want to eat kosher food. Why do I want to eat only kosher food? And why do I want to eat only kosher food? Are you following me? Because I believe that's what Hashem wants. How do I know that that's what Hashem wants? This book that we call Torah. Now, this is not so simple, by the way. Sometimes the Torah will tell me, this is what Hashem wants you to want. Hashem does not want you to want to hurt people for no reason. But sometimes He does. Right? If you're in the army and you're in a war, sometimes you have to hurt people.
It's not no reason.
And sometimes, once again, sometimes hurting people is actually what Hashem wants you to do. And He actually wants you to want that for the right reason.
Amalek.
So now we get to the question.
You can't
see
that the people who you're fighting against is Amalek.
No, one second. Whoa. One second. Josh. Grab it! We have 3 minutes. I'm just wondering who's going to listen to this tape and say, whoa, right? I'm not talking about Amalek. I mentioned Amalek. Forget Amalek for the moment. It's a whole different discussion. If I'm in a war, and I believe that it's a melchemes mitzvah, It doesn't matter. Now we have to see how I know I'm right. But if I believe that, and if I believe that I'm doing it because Hashem wants me to do it, and a guy gets up on a rooftop and he's got an RPG, and he's going to shoot a rocket-propelled grenade at the tank that I'm on, and I absolutely know, based on the tank that I'm on, that that RPG is going to hit it and kill everybody in it, and get our whole column stuck in an alleyway in Beirut. And get our entire column stuck in an alleyway in Beirut. And God forbid, might get all my men killed. Then even if that person holding an RPG is an 8-year-old child, I think it's a mitzvah for me to kill that child. It's a painful mitzvah. And I have to want to kill that child. And I have to feel the pain of that wanting. And that's okay. But how do I know that? So there are two ways to understand this. The first is, sometimes it's clear. What does the Torah tell me? If I think that it's clear to me what the Torah is saying, and that's not always so clear, but if I'm clear on what the Torah is saying, then I know that that's what I should want. And then the question is, how do I get to want that? Sometimes it's not so clear. You know, you're not sure. Do you want to be a doctor or a lawyer? Your mother wants you to be a doctor. Your father wants you to be a lawyer. And you're not sure. Should you do this or should you do that? Or maybe something else. Right? How do I know what to want? So there, and I'm giving you the synopsis here, there, the Vilna Gaon and the Evan Shleima actually has an interesting idea. He says there are two components to our decisions in life. Right? There is an objectively correct decision. You are either more suited to be a doctor or more suited to be a lawyer, let's say. Right? When I was 10 years old, I decided that I was going to be the first firm person to make it in the NBA. I thought it was going to be awesome.
So, I used to play. So did everyone else.
Right. I used to play in Riverside Park and sometimes in Central Park on Sundays. And it was me and all the brothers. I had a friend. I had a friend, C.B. Gast. And we used to go every Sunday morning. And had some interesting stories. I remember there was a big guy named Ivan. He was massive. He was bigger than any two of you combined, including the two of you. And he was massive. And he once saved my life because somebody there wanted to do something untoward towards a 10-year-old boy. But the reason that I realized after a while, okay, I'm not going to be making rebounds in this game, right? And, long before the advent of the three-point system in the NBA, I realized the only way to do this was to be able to hit outside shots. So I used to go when they weren't playing and just practice. Right? And I'm sure I couldn't do it anymore, but I got good, you know, I could pop it in from the outside, and that's what they would do. Now, if you're way outside, they can't take you, even if you're short, because then all you have to do is move somewhere else. So I would pop in these 3 points, and I had in my mind, that I was going to be in the NBA, and then one day, right? Now, here I am, and I'm making a decision. Should I go for it? Should I be in the NBA? Become a basketball sharpshooter, right? The Jewish Spud Webb, right? Or should I go into chinuch and become a rav? Now, I'm now 51 years old, and I look back. I think it's fair to say, for me, you could disagree with me, but I think I made the right choice, whatever. And I think this more so, objectively speaking, because Baruch Hu knows that it's more appropriate for me to be a teacher than to be an NBA player. But there is, but, resist, short, but, there is a second part of that decision, okay? There is objectively what is the right decision. There's also why you're making the decision. Okay? If you're not sure if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer, right? If you really objectively are better suited to be a doctor, but you're becoming a doctor because you think you're going to make a lot of money, and you got that eye and that Maserati, you know, or the Porsche, right? I think that's the wrong reason to become a doctor, right? Right? If you become a doctor because you want to help people, that's the right reason to become a doctor. Says the Vilna Gaon. Jared, says the Vilna Gaon. If you make the right decision, but you make it for the wrong reasons, it will become the wrong decision. If you make the wrong decision, but you make it for the right reasons, it'll become the right decision. And that's not always true. When is that not true? When the halacha tells you it's not true. Right? If you want to eat treif, but you want to do it for the right reasons, because you figure you'll get other Jews into it, and they're eating treif, so if you're with them and you learn Torah, the Torah says you can't do that. So then you're stuck. But if the Torah isn't clear, that's a recipe that almost always works. It certainly always worked for me. So getting back to the point, I am constantly in a state of ratzon. I have to tap into what that ratzon is. Right? One last point. When do I do that? How do I do that? Right? So I'll give you an example. Before, and then we'll take a few questions. Before I started, right? Oh, we have to stop. Okay. So we will continue this mitzvah Hashem next week. Food for thought. Okay? Any questions? Feel free. Yes.
Josh had a question.
Okay, so you said that God is like everywhere.